It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Charles Payne.
I'm Martha McCallum.
I'm Greg Jarrett, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Thursday, December 15th, 2022. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. Next week, a COVID health rule that kept many migrants south of the border comes to an end. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle say they're worried that Homeland Security officials aren't prepared as an overwhelming number of migrants continues to arrive, even with the rule still in place.
The bulk of my time is consumed trying to secure the border. And it's very difficult to have a broader conversation on immigration reform when the security of our country is just completely wide open.
I'm Dave Anthony. It's not solar, but it does harness the power of the sun. New technology that could energize our future.
What's there not to love about fusion power? Cannot melt down, does not produce nuclear waste, uses seawater for its basic fuel. That's the ideal fantasy of anyone who does energy research.
And I'm Tommy Lahren. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
An end to a COVID-era health policy used to turn away many migrants at the border was scheduled to stop in 6 days. Last month, a federal judge in Washington, D.C. said Title 42 was unlawful. Republican attorneys general are still appealing. And even with the rule still in place, border officials said earlier this week they were close to 500,000 apprehensions just since October 1st. Fox News' Bill Malusian is in La Jolla, Texas, and reports the Biden administration was asking for $4 billion to help deal with the fallout.
That source also tells Fox News that right now, if Title 42 drops, DHS is projecting there will be between 9,000 and 15,000 illegal crossings every single day. Right now, we're averaging about 7,000 per day.
Unprecedented numbers, especially in a cold month like December. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas was in El Paso this week and said they are preparing for what could come.
We have to coordinate with our partners, not just the nonprofit organizations with which we work very closely, not just cities along the border, like El Paso, but also our international partners.
He told Omar Ornelas at the El Paso Times they're considering expanding a program that allows some asylum seekers to apply for entry to the U.S. through Mexico City, and said the administration is working with Mexico's government. But when asked if there might be new limits placed on asylum seekers, Mayorkas said there are a lot of discussions about different ideas, but no decisions have been made. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan was asked this week about the national security concerns here.
So the team has been working very hard to ensure that we are taking steps to be able to manage the expiration of Title 42 and to put in place a process that will be orderly and humane. And we believe that in doing so, we can protect our national security concerns.
Some lawmakers have their doubts. West Virginia Democratic Senator Joe Manchin, Montana Democratic Senator John Tester, Texas Republican Senator John Cornyn, and Texas Democratic Congressman Henry Cuellar have all sent inquiries to administration officials regarding the end to Title 42, pushing back and asking for the plan.
I have not heard back from the administration, but this is a bipartisan, bicameral letter that highlights this border crisis isn't, nor should it be, partisan.
Texas Republican Congressman Tony Gonzalez also signed on to a recent letter to the White House. His district is along the border.
It's honestly just lawmakers like myself that are working to solve this problem, solve it, not kind of kick a political football around, but try to solve it. Part of what we're asking for is a plan in which, when Title 42 goes away, what's the plan? Right now, I'm hearing on the ground, there is no plan. And it's very evident that it's very chaotic. And I worry Title 42 goes away in a week, that we're going to see this crisis continue to spiral and be a crisis on steroids.
Talk to me more about the management of this. We know Secretary Mayorkas was in El Paso this week. He said they need to speak with international partners, namely Mexico, to make sure that things like that caravan of buses of people that our own Bill Malusian saw this weekend, that doesn't happen again. He also said they're looking to expand the program that allows people to apply for asylum from Mexico City, so not at the border. And we're also hearing now talk of maybe making a stricter asylum process or changing the asylum process, though Mr. Mayorkas didn't confirm that to the El Paso Times. Are you hearing all of these things are being talked about?
You know, this has really been ongoing ever since the administration took office. The State Department, which has a very large role to play in this crisis, is completely MIA. They are solely focused on what's happening in Europe, and they've lost sight of what's happening in our backyard. Secretary Mayorkas isn't wrong when he is pushing for partnerships with Mexico, to name Mexico, Central America in particular. Look, I've given up on the administration's foreign policy. It is disastrous at best. And I've started to take things into my own hands. Just this weekend, I traveled to Mexico. I went to Monterrey and I visited with the mayor, Colosio, there. And part of our discussion was trade and commerce, but it was also security. Just a couple months ago, I traveled to Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador.
Yeah.
I met with the president of Guatemala and had similar conversations. And those,
but you can't do things on your own, right? This is a federal matter at heart, right? So you do need the federal administration, the federal government, to be involved.
Yeah, we, the American people, deserve to have a State Department that is functional and doing their job. But as a member of Congress, you know, we can't wait for the administration to come around. It's 2 years and they've done nothing, the State Department in particular. So look, I'm a retired master chief. You got to go over, under, or through to get a problem solved. Certainly throwing more money at the problem isn't going to do it. So I'm trying to gain traction here. The bipartisan letter was part of that, to go, hey, this isn't a crazy Republican jumping in but down, just trying to shoot holes in the administration. I'm looking for solutions, and the people that I represent demand it. It's pure chaos right now in El Paso.
Is there a legislative, a congressional solution here? We know Tom Tillis of North Carolina, Republican, and now newly independent Senator Kyrsten Sinema have this bill. I'm not sure how far it goes in addressing those who are already here illegally, but is this a tipping point for members of Congress? What's your sense of the vibe, even on the other side of the aisle, about is this what finally pushes lawmakers to touch this rail of politics, this immigration rail?
You know, I've been in regular communications with Senator Sinema. We've been talking about this, about her proposal and others, quite frankly. The bulk of my time is consumed trying to secure the border. And it's very difficult to have a broader conversation on immigration reform when the security of our country is just completely wide open. So from my standpoint, I am pushing to keep Title 42 in place. I'm pushing to spend more time and energy on special interest aliens, these folks that are on the terrorist watch list, not to mention the mental health of Border Patrol agents. We've had 14 Customs and Border Patrol agents commit suicide this year. This is a historic number. I just dropped the TAPS Act, bipartisan piece of legislation. So, you know, it's tough for me to talk about immigration reform and all these other things when I'm, you know, having to travel abroad and do the State Department's job and having to, you know, keep my head above water here in the States with Title 42 and others. But I mean, I'm willing to have that conversation. I want to have that conversation. But right now, I am solely focused on securing the border.
You did note, and we saw you appear with Republican members on the Capitol Hill steps last week when you announced the TAPS Act, because 14 agents have committed suicide this past year. It's a recent high. What is your insight, because you've spent a lot of time at the border, that's where your district is, what is your insight into why more agents are committing suicide?
They are just completely exhausted. You know, last Christmas, coming up on a year, I spent Christmas at the border with Border Patrol agents. I put 500 miles on my pickup truck. We started from 3 a.m., finished at 10 p.m. I visited six different stations. And what I saw that day was a force, the Border Patrol in particular, that were completely exhausted. Now, a year later, we have this historic number of suicides. It's just they're tired. They're beyond tired. Not to mention, imagine you're a father or a mother and you're having to pull, you know, dead bodies, babies in particular, out of the river, or you're having to deal with victims, you know, sexual assault victims on a regular basis. And it's just the stories go on and on. That these are human beings that weighs on them. This is another one of the areas where, you know, I've tried to get the administration engaged. Matter of fact, here shortly, myself and Congressman Cuellar are having a meeting with acting CBP Commissioner Troy Miller. This is a positive step. One of the things that we're going to bring up are these suicides, among others. But to me, you know, it can't just be empty rhetoric. People need solutions, because at the end of the day, everyone is impacted in this crisis.
I want to ask you a couple more questions before we go that don't have to do with the border, if you're okay with that. I know you're a Navy cryptologist, or you were. I wanted your perspective on cybersecurity because of the conversations we're hearing now about TikTok and the notion that this app, with its parent company based in China, they can suck all the data off of our phones. I understand the folks that are at TikTok, they believe they're going to reach some sort of agreement that allows them to sort of move forward and push past these calls for a ban after this Treasury Department review is over. With your knowledge of cybersecurity, is this possible? Will TikTok survive because millions of Americans have this on their phone?
I spent 20 years in the intelligence community as a naval cryptologist. I don't use TikTok. I don't recommend anyone use TikTok. The Chinese government is salivating over the fact that it's been able to integrate this piece of software into American society. This is one of the areas that we as lawmakers, we need to highlight the dangers and the threats to what the Chinese government is doing. So, the sooner it can be banned, the better. And you know, when you start talking about the intelligence community, there is a national security threat out there. And these applications, while in some cases may seem harmless, are anything but.
As a Republican, you guys are about to take the majority. We're hearing a lot about in 2023 that we're going to hear a lot of hearings that are going to be held, some on President Biden's son Hunter's finances, Dr. Fauci and the U.S. response to COVID, the withdrawal from Afghanistan. What do you think should be a GOP priority in the coming year if Republican lawmakers are going to spend time on hearings?
You know, one of the roles of a member of Congress and the body as a whole, the House of Representatives, is oversight of the executive branch. So the American public absolutely deserve to find out the facts of what happened in Afghanistan with that debacle, you know, why 13 Americans were killed, you know, the facts of what are the origins of COVID. But I will also say I do not want to see House Republicans get sucked up into these hearings that are just constantly political theater. The American people are also hurting when it comes to finances. Inflation is through the roof, not to mention this border crisis that we were talking about earlier. And then as well as our threats, you know, national security threats abroad, the instability in Europe and other places. So as a lawmaker, my thought process is, yes, you know, I encourage oversight, but I don't have the luxury of grandstanding in a committee and just playing politics. You know, the people, the American people deserve much better than that. And I look forward to being part of the Republican majority that delivers for the American people. Don't just, you know, talk and have these endless hearings, but there's actual tangible things like protecting the energy sector. Energy security is national security. These type of tangible, real things where the American people can go. Now, this is why we elected Republicans to be the majority in the House.
Congressman, thank you.
Thank you.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
This is Tommy Lahren with your Fox News commentary coming up.
It happened at 1 o'clock in the morning on December 5th. Researchers went nuclear.
At the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in California, scientists at the National Ignition Facility achieved fusion ignition.
And that is being hailed as a very big deal. But what does it mean?
Creating more energy from fusion reactions than the energy used to start the process.
That is Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm.
It's the first time it has ever been done in a laboratory, anywhere in the world.
But what they did is actually out of this world, replicating
certain conditions that are found only in the stars and the sun.
Though only briefly, in an experiment that's taken 13 years and billions of dollars to finally achieve. Still, The Wall Street Journal reports it has fueled what could be a surge of private investments in fusion technology. And it's different than solar power or the nuclear power plants of the past. But don't take my word for it. I'm no scientist. Professor Michio Kaku is.
Well, the holy grail of energy research is to put the sun in a bottle.
Professor Kaku is a theoretical physicist at City College and City University of New York.
They took 200 laser beams, fired it at a small little pellet of lithium deuteride, heated it up to the temperature of a star, and briefly had ignition, generating more energy out than it consumed in. This could be a game changer because it does not create nuclear waste like what uranium plants do. They cannot melt down like what uranium plants do. And the basic energy source for a fusion reactor is seawater, hydrogen from seawater.
With this little, you said it was like a little pellet, right?
Mm-hmm.
That they use. So this is that like, you said it was the sun in the bottle. So that when these lasers hit this pellet, it just, what happens to the pellet? Does it evaporate? Does it just go, does it vaporize?
Yeah, the surface of this pellet, which is the size of a pea, is vaporized evenly and it implodes. And as it implodes, temperatures rise to the higher than the temperature of a star. And then the hydrogen inside that pellet combines with other hydrogen to create helium, releasing energy via Einstein's famous equation, E equals mc squared. And so this is how stars do it. Stars use gravity to compress hydrogen gas until it ignites to create a star. We can't do that on the Earth, so we use laser beams, 200 laser beams fired on a small little pellet, vaporizing the surface of the pellet so that it implodes like a star, creating temperatures not seen since the beginning of the birth of our sun. And that's how it all fits together. We're essentially getting a microscopic piece of the sun on the Earth.
How does the temperature get that hot and not burn everything around it? How do they contain that temperature?
Well, first of all, it's very tiny. We're not talking about a gigantic furnace that you see in television shows about the Industrial Revolution. We're not talking about that.
They've been working on this for a long time. They've been working on this for years. And the difference is they've been doing this, and the lasers have led to this kind of reaction before. It's just this is the first time that they created more energy in the experiment than they used, correct?
That's right. There's something called the Q factor. The Q factor is the energy out divided by the energy in. Q is usually less than one. And that's the frustrating thing. These previous prototypes absorbed more energy than they produced, with Q being less than one. For the first time in history, Q was positive, greater than one. And that's what all the sensational headlines are all about. Q is now greater than one, meaning that it creates more energy than it consumes.
But this is in a giant facility that's like the size of a stadium, and it's taken billions of dollars just to make that, just to get this very first tiny little experiment to succeed. How do we take the leap that this somehow is our energy of the future if it is so difficult to do now?
Well, it's going to be done in stages. So we're not talking about having a fusion plant in your backyard anytime soon. Stage one is to hit Q is equal to one, which they did this week. That is a self-sustaining fusion reactor process. Step two is to scale it up. Scale it up so that we can energize a city and not just a few light bulbs. Stage three is commercialization of it so that we can spread it around the entire planet Earth.
But at the same time as I'm reading this, they would have to do this nonstop in a facility in the future, not just one time. This would have to be done over and over and over again on a large scale. How can they do that?
Well, all they have to do is repeat this process over and over and over again. So instead of simply one explosion of energy, you get a series of explosions of energy. And that's how you would get enough energy to sustain, for example, a city. But of course, we're still talking about maybe mid-century before this becomes commonplace around the entire planet Earth. And why is that important? Because global warming will be kicking in furiously by mid-century. And so we hope to have this up and ready by mid-century when global warming really starts to ravage the countryside.
Though there are those, I've read some scientists who aren't sure this is ever going to be practical for energy. In fact, this technology and this lab that started this work did it for nuclear weapon research, not for energy.
That's right. But what is a hydrogen bomb? A hydrogen bomb is essentially a star that has no brakes on it, and it simply unleashes its energy in one big blast. But who's funding it? The Pentagon is practically speaking, providing a lot of the funding for it, and the Department of Energy, because of the fact that the equations for a hydrogen bomb are very similar to the equations of a star and the equations that are found in the NIF in California. And so we're not talking about doing weapons research other than using simulations, using the equations of NIF in order to model aging nuclear bombs in our arsenal. Our nuclear weapons are very old. And the question is, do they still work? Well, we don't want to test them anymore because that would violate certain international agreements. So in other words, instead of testing our hydrogen bombs, we run simulations of them in this facility because of the fact that we're basically using equations rather than actually blowing up islands.
Okay, so this technology, you're confident that it can do both?
Yes, you want to make sure that your bombs actually work. But it's been many decades since we last launched a hydrogen bomb. And so that's why you want to simulate these things inside this system.
You talk about, the middle of the century. You know, when we think of a power plant now, we think of one either coal-fired, gas-fired. Obviously, there's more wind and solar that's being used. But how big a facility and how many facilities would we need? And could this ultimately be our only energy source?
Well, yeah, you're exactly right. Think of the transition from firewood to oil and coal. It took a while for us to, find enough oil and coal to make it economical. I mean, think about it. Seawater being the basic fuel. What's there not to love about fusion power? Cannot melt down, does not produce nuclear waste, uses seawater for its basic fuel. That's the ideal fantasy of anyone who does energy research.
So ultimately, your hope in the future, someday, the only thing we'd ever need is ocean water. We don't need oil or gas anymore for energy production.
That's right. If you watch Star Trek or any of the science fiction shows, everything is done on fusion power. Nobody talks about oil and coal on Star Trek. And in some sense, that could be true. That could be a glimpse into the future.
So when the funding for this, is this going to, the government can't do it all. The private sector is going to have to embrace technology like this.
Well, believe it or not, Bill Gates and company, a lot of billionaires are backing yet another version of a fusion plant. So right now, they're not one, not two, but three. Three versions of fusion reactors, one of them backed by private investors like Bill Gates. And these are billionaires putting their money on yet another design for using magnetism and superconducting materials in order to create a miniature star in the laboratory rather than using laser beams. So laser beams are not the only game in town.
Someday, is one technology going to be like beta and it goes away and the other is like VHS and it becomes the standard? Is one of them going to win or can they all do it together?
I think all three will hit break even, but I think one of them will become economical. And that's the marketplace, right? You don't want to bankrupt the company that's backing the technology. I think that one of the three will eventually win.
But this is for energy only. We couldn't power engines, cars, planes.
Oh, no, everything. Anything involving energy can be powered by fusion, including rockets. We're talking about fusion rockets that may eventually hit near the speed of light, taking us perhaps to the stars. So we're talking about anything that moves can be modeled using electricity and using the technology that could be unleashed by fusion power. Anything that moves.
You're so optimistic. I've read some scientists who are just throwing cold water on it. Why are you so optimistic when they aren't?
Because there's a joke, a longstanding joke, that every 20 years we physicists promise fusion power doesn't come, and we promise it again for the next 20 years. That joke's been going on for many a 20-year period of time. And there's some truth to that. And so it takes time. We in America like to have everything done with a snap of the fingers.
Professor Michio Kaku, theoretical physicist, professor of physics at City College, City University of New York. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Meet the American who
created the first department store Santa.
James Edgar channeled entrepreneurial spirit and a gift for making people smile into changing the way the world sees Christmas. Edgar was the first department store Santa, as recognized by the Santa Hall of Fame. An immigrant from Scotland, he opened the James Edgar & Company department store in downtown Brockton, Massachusetts, in the late 1800s. He had a knack for clever promotion, a love of children, and a patriotic zeal for his adopted homeland. That, according to a longtime Brockton businessman. The 19th-century entrepreneur often greeted customers while dressed up as various child-friendly characters, a sea captain, a clown, even George Washington. He donned a Santa Claus suit at his department store for the first time in 1890. It was based on an 1863 illustration of Santa by artist Thomas Nast. It proved to be an instant sensation. James Edgar died in 1909 at the age of 66, but his spirit lives on in malls and department stores all around the country and across the world. In the Christmas dreams of young boys and girls all year long, the city of Brockton hosts an annual reading of the story of James Edgar, much like other communities do a visit from St. Nicholas, and celebrates his legacy in its Christmas parade held in Edgar's honor every year. I'm Gianna Gelosi. Go to the lifestyle section at foxnews.com to find more of these incredible American stories.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Subscribe to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
What's on your mind?
Airline ticket prices are expensive. Gas, also expensive. Everything in Biden's America is expensive. A new study by Credit Karma shows about 41% of Gen Zers rely on mom and dad to foot the bill for their homeward-bound holiday travel. 1 in 10 also said they won't be coming home at all because neither they nor their family can afford it. Round-trip flight prices are up almost 40% from last year. Hotels and rental cars are also through the roof. And when you add that to the cost of rent, college tuition, food, and basic life necessities, youngsters and their parents are spread too thin. A study from savings.com found half of parents with a child over 18 provide them with some level of financial assistance, and it's costing them on average about $1,000 a month. You know, at some point, you'd think these kids and their parents would make the economic connection. This is Biden's economy. Maybe stop voting for it. I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can listen to all of my hot takes at foxnewscommentary.com.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.